People will talk. To the latest episode of the People Will Talk podcast. Joining us today is another special interviewee, Miguel, who is a Spaniard, an architect. He's developed an interest in Japanese culture, woods, and also he works in publishing like I do as well. And over the course of this interview, we will have many things to talk about. Miguel, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you, Enda. Feeling great, actually, after a couple, well, not a couple, but after a week of resting in the beach, I could somehow restore my energy for the upcoming months.
I do know you went to the south of Spain for a holiday. You love traveling. And I think to start off with this could be interesting because we are in a moment where people are traveling more. And after a year where they couldn't. So what does it mean to you to be able to go to different places at the moment?
Well, I think it's a little bit strange, no? It depends on someone. I could see many attitudes, I mean, of the people surrounding me. Like when you are traveling, you see like people are back in 2019, you know, like behaving normally, nothing happened here. But actually, we are really cautious and we are like going really slowly with this. Also, I think that there's something related to anxiety and this kind of psychological issues that this affect, I mean, this situation related to the pandemic affected us. And it's true that I'm going slowly with this kind of recovering of this traveling thing. So we went to South Spain because we usually do in summer to Almeria because it's, I don't know, it's a region that is more isolated, I think. Somehow some parts of the region are more isolated of this kind of more summer tourism. And we stay there like quite calmly and relaxed, like with no much activity more than reading. And so, yeah, but about traveling, it's true that I'm like really thrilling to go to, I don't know, for example, Venice, where I lived for 1 year. I always want to go back. So I don't know, there are like some places that I really want to go back. But for now, I think we have to be, I don't know, more...
take it slowly, you know, to get back into the rhythm of traveling. I think that's a fair comment. And you mentioned Venice, but you traveled even farther. You traveled to Japan. So what brought you to Japan in the first place?
Well, as an architect, it's true that through our education at university, Japan is some kind of, I don't know, main thing, you know, because of this relationship between modernity and the strong tradition that they have. Also the poetics that have their this kind of, I don't know, there's like many things about beauty and poetics and aesthetics involved in Japanese tradition. And somehow this is one of the important things that you see from abroad, you know. And then so I sent my portfolio to many offices in the world. I mean, it was 2014 when I finished. So we were in going out from this economic crisis, and but all of my colleagues and all of my friends were going abroad. I mean, China, London, I mean, outside of Spain, trying to find a work. So I found a small office there in Nagoya, and I decided to go there and work. So I stayed there for the first time for a couple of months, learning with one architect that actually was really involved in craftsmanship. I mean, craftsmanship with processes to develop more modern architecture. So it was some kind of discovery or something completely new, because it was not the role of the architect as someone drawing plans and completely aside from the reality of construction, but it was more like being involved in the construction as a worker as well, like doing stuff with the craftsmen in on site. So this completely changed my perception of what I wanted to do and what I wanted to be. And from there, I traveled two more times. I mean, just for tourism, I'm showing, because my parents couldn't come the first time after my experience there. And they were saying like, we have to go back and you have to show us around and everything. there were one of the trips, it was because they wanted to visit it. And the third one for me and the second for them, it was my mother actually had an important event there, because she's a psychologist and she had this kind of international psychologist meeting. So they met in Hiroshima and I went with her. And the fourth and last time in Japan was because I found one of the only schools about Japanese carpentry that they were developing some training in English, that this is actually quite rare because this craftsmanship is really really traditional. And I don't know, my carpenters are not that into first speaking English and second teaching to foreign people. It's like more this kind of old tradition of learning since you are really young and you start in the workshop with a master and then you spend many, many years learning, you know? So, well, I went there and I stayed my last time there and then I went back. So these are like the four times that I've been there and how I developed this more interest in the Japanese culture and related to other things.
I must say, it sounds like you have a very interesting family as well. You're an international architect, your mother's a psychologist, and I believe your sister is an artist as well. So I'm sure the family dinners are very stimulating conversation. And what's interesting, for you're an architect in Japan, and I don't know if you've seen these traditional Japanese houses that are townhouses in the city that are made completely from wood. Have you stayed in any one of these in any of your trips to Japan?
And it depends, because I travel and I stayed in many places. I stayed in family houses, like they allow me to stay, sleep in there, or all the times I shared an apartment with Japanese friends. And so I've been in it, but yes, I could stay in a traditional house. And this experience is something really interesting, because it's a cultural completely different way of living the space, and also feeling the, I don't know, then I think that then you understand many things related to Japanese culture while staying in this kind of architecture and this surrounded by these traditional materials, this traditional way of using wood. Also the scent, you know, how everything smells. I think then you start to discover many things about sensibility and about perceptor, I think, through these experiences.
Oh, that's a very beautiful description of that. I think you're a guy who likes to get involved. You mentioned earlier, you're not just an architect who stands aside with the plan. You like being involved in the project, and wood is a special type of material because it has these characteristics. No, is there anything else that attracts you to wood? Is it something that's it's a natural material? Is it more sustainable? Or do you have kind of other thoughts about why wood is such a nice thing to work with as well?
Wood is a fantastic material, of course. I mean, because it has been I think in some way, the way we understand wood and how it has been used for many centuries, in some cultures has been lost, because somehow it's a material that is affected by the weather, by the humidity, And I think that for a long time, and well, it burns really not easily, but I mean it burns not like stone. Or so I think that for many time, people has lost a little bit of trust and confidence in this material because they feel that it's weak. This is happening a lot of in Spain, but as well in Europe. So people think, or there's this conception about wood that is not strong enough, you know, not strong enough as brick, not strong enough as stone. But suddenly when you start to study a little bit the properties that it has, also the different kind of woods that exist, it's not, I mean, you can find a weak wood or you can find, I mean, it depends, you know, also about the species of the trees. And but when you start to study a little bit, you can see a lot of advantages, you know? Something that you can really use also for furniture, but as well for construction. And one of the main things is for sure the feeling of wood. That's something that is completely different to other materials because it has some kind of warmth, and you can feel really something really positive and unique from touching and feeling and smelling the wood. So there are, and of course, this perception that I was saying at the beginning about this, the weakness of it, is completely false because it's really strong material and it's really flexible as well. And this allows somehow flexibility for structural construction, you know? That's why, for example, all this Japanese architecture, but also architecture from Southeast Asia, is so flexible that could allow this kind of huge earthquakes. You know, okay. It's about joinery as well, because joinery in this tradition is another kind of theme there to talk about. But the wood is doing its job. Also, is well, I could talk a lot, but I think that's somehow a brief resume about.
Well, you're right though, that it's kind of going out of fashion, because even in Japan, I mentioned those beautiful houses that are made from wood, they're going out of fashion for those same reasons that you mentioned: fire, doubts about its integrity and everything. And now NGOs are some NGOs are trying to protect them as a cultural heritage and to have some of them maintained, because a lot of Japanese prefectures and cities are just going in and destroying them completely. What's interesting, like, apart from living in Japan four times, you were a student there, as you said, of these masters, and you've come back to Spain now, and you're an architect here in Spain, and also you have your own carpentry studio as well. So how is that going in Spain? Are Spanish people receptive to this Japanese-Spanish fusion?
I think everyone is amazed about the process and about seeing the workshop on the tools. Something kind of, yeah. And also friends that I did in Japan, especially the one carpenter that I met in the school, because there was the master and then the apprentice. There were two, and the apprentice was translating everything from the master to us, to the students. And actually right now, this guy who was the apprentice is really now one of the most influential carpenter in Instagram and social media and YouTube, because he started to share the process and content related to joinery and his work. And nowadays really famous. And I'm telling this because all the people that I know him. It's like I know him personally, but actually a lot of people is sending me his videos like, have you checked this? And I'm telling them, nah, actually it's my friend. I'm saying this because actually there is a lot of interest in this Japanese journey, how in wooden structures, Japanese wooden structures. But it's true that something that we don't perceive from Spain or from Europe is when we see this kind of structures, we somehow feel, because we are in a more individual society somehow, and we feel that this work has been developed by one carpenter, Like, for example, this house that I built is done or designed by Miguel, for example, no?
Yeah.
So this temple or this, but in Japan it's completely different. There is a really much collective work. They work in a really big teams of carpenters that actually could develop this. No? I'm saying and explaining this because it's this teamwork or teams of carpenters working in this way in Spain is completely different, impossible to, not impossible, but almost impossible to find. That makes the work of to import this kind of techniques here is really expensive, really, really expensive to find the same. I mean, there are teams because here in Spain, I won't deny that we have strong structural carpentry related to what we, well, I don't know how it's called, but Carpinteria del Blanco or white carpentry. Mm-hmm. It was the carpentry related to medieval times and then related to Islamic way of construction as well. It's mixed. It's Islamic and also traditional from the Iberian Peninsula. But what I mean is that these teams really trying to do traditional construction here, even though they started to do Japanese techniques, is really, really expensive. So, and it takes quite a lot of time to develop it. So, I think that that's the idea. Like, there's a lot of people amazed about these techniques. I'm trying to develop some part, of course, but it's difficult to find a client that really wants to pay and really wants to do this. And first, I think we should try to turn to wood construction. And then when we could arrive to this more efficient and ecological way of building, then I think we could find the way to introduce better techniques or more expensive ones, or I don't know. I think that's more a cultural and social change that needs to happen, because otherwise, I don't know, European Union now is asking to develop more efficient construction, have to find better materials, and I don't know. I think that's it.
Okay, it's fascinating. And I'll ask you about Japanese culture before we pivot towards your other life as well as a publisher, which would be fascinating. But I'll ask you first, though, about being a Spanish person, a European in Japan. I've known people who've gone there and have loved the culture. They've loved the people. The food was hard to adapt to and they missed the food at home. What are the things that you really loved about Japan and were easy for you to enjoy and maybe something that was maybe difficult to understand or to adapt to, if there's any such thing as well?
Yeah, I mean, I always say that I have my own contradictions related to Japan. And every time that many people show some interest and fascination about Japan, I always say, like, wait, I mean, there's two sides, of course. Like in every culture, I won't say that Japanese are like the only ones that have contradictions. We all have. But yeah, I hope that, I think that even though some Japanese people or friends that I have, I commented this kind of feeling with them and they somehow understood it. It's like, but well, I will explain. in Japan, I experienced both things. I mean, the most beautiful and special experience that I had in my life sometimes, I mean, related to aesthetics socially as well, related to I don't know, this kind of beautiful craftsmanship and beautiful artwork. And at the same time, I found Japanese are really tough and they have a really strong,
Don't worry, take your time. What's the word in Spanish?
Exigente.
Oh, demanding. They're very demanding.
People. Demanding.
Yeah.
Exactly. That's the word. So they are really, 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 really demanding. And they are more demanding with themselves than with foreign people. I think when you go to Japan, there are like two stages. First, you are like more they are more curious about you and they are really, really, really nice with you. But then, I mean, if you really want to go in deeply into their tradition, into their process, into their perception, then you are going to be asked for the same quality, precision, whatever, you know? So in this case, they are really demanding, and that way of demanding sometimes is really strong and really tough, and is not pleasant to, you know, how they demand it. Sometimes it's really authoritarian, and I completely understand, because somehow Japan has a strong sense of tradition, but has been as a country, their own traditions has been locked inside an island for many centuries, and they opened recently. I mean, for us, this kind of international connections and everything related to countries and to Europe and to, I don't know, the rest of the world has been more open, but actually they opened internationally one century and a half, you know, in, I don't know, 1876, or I don't remember the date. Mm-hmm. But this somehow is what I always say, like, if you want to visit Japan, just enjoy the tourism, just enjoy the beauty of it, the beauty of the landscape, the this kind of power and the sense of nature, also their different interpretations and ways to feel their own tradition. But if you really want to work there, and if you really want to be involved in the society somehow, then you are going to be asked to these demandings, huh? Or
yeah. Mm-hmm. I've heard, like, for example, in Japanese work culture, some people, it sounds like an exaggeration what I'm going to say, but it is seemingly a problem. People do die in the office because they're, you know, it's frowned upon to take all your vacations. And for example, when you come back from vacation, you have to give a present to your colleagues for taking care of your share of the work, and you can't really leave until the boss leaves. And then even outside the work area on the metro, you can't really talk loudly. There's a lot of social norms you have to follow, not to be an individual, not to be loud and individualistic, and kind of think about other people, which is a good thing as well. And as you say, these are things that have been locked into the culture, and they're not necessarily good or bad, they're just what they are, no? But as somebody who's outside that system, did you feel, like, nervous about, am I breaking a social taboo on the street now? Am I doing the wrong thing in the restaurant here? Have I made a mistake, you know, in the office? Was that, like, a thing that you had to worry about and was on your mind, or maybe not?
Mm-hmm. I mean, during the day life, I mean, I have to recognize that I'm actually this kind of really, I don't know, calm person. And I'm always really polite and respectful. And I don't know, a Japanese friend told me, actually, you are even too respectful for me, you know, like, even more. So it's like, because we had an argument somehow at one point in my first trip. And I was trying to explain so politely and respectfully my, but they couldn't even understand what I was saying, because it was too respectful for him. So in this part, I'm just kidding somehow, but related to this, it's true that I didn't have this kind of sense of maybe I'm doing something wrong. Not in the daily life, not walking around there, but yes, in work. I mean, the work experience. You know, like, there are this kind of really demanding attitude, and you are all the time questioning yourself, like, saying, like, is this right? Is this not? I'm just doing the right thing. And I think that is not, it was not just me. I mean, I think that also the Japanese colleagues that I had at work, at some point, they told me that they felt the same insecurity. Like, I don't know if I'm failing the boss. I don't know if I. So there are, like, this. This attitude towards the work is that. I think we should understand it as if you feel. I mean, the carpenter workshop. Mm-hmm. All right, you took this perception of work, then you put it in the office, and that's it, you know, like, this kind of absolute, how to say, entrega, or
like delivery, or absolute.
No, como, it's like, no, I won't say submission to the master, you
okay,
know, but
yes.
I don't know if that's the word, but you like,
oh, there's a hierarchy there. No, for sure. I would say
exactly like yeah. a really, really strong hierarchy. So yeah. what I mean is that this kind of old craftsmanship has a connection with everything. I mean, this kind of role really, really traditional way of working. It's now implemented in a really modern society, but this modernity is more like the offices are really high and everything is really advanced and they have the best technology, but actually somehow socially they still have this work to be done, also related to feelings. I think that actually also the feelings and the are not like we tend to express the feelings, but that's not happening the same Japan, you know?
Yeah.
Like when we are angry, we show that we are angry. When we are sad, we show that we are sad, but they somehow put that inside. And that develops a lot of problems as well to find connection in between the, no, I mean, when you said like you have, if you go on holidays, you have to give a gift to every one of you. So this kind of, I don't know, strict behaviors or strict norms or rules
yeah.
related to society that somehow I think I don't know the word, but somehow it makes the people to close themselves, no, to the interior and not, I don't know.
It's a country I would love to visit. I've seen so many videos about it, and as you mentioned, the contradictions that are in every country. But Japan, on one hand, so technological as well. On the other hand, you have to use stamps for official documents, lots of paperwork. Where mm-hmm. in other cultures, it's digitized as well. But also, you and I, we are brothers in a sense because we both work with books. So you have your own publishing house as well. That is fantastic. How did this journey start? So we've kind of like went from your first beginnings to Japan to, you know, to where you are now in Spain, bringing these techniques to Spain. Let's go back to the start of your publishing journey. And where did it all start, and how do we end up with Miguel, the publishing house chief executive as well?
Well, but this actually happened the first thing of all, like before I was an architect or before I was interested in anything, I started publishing some magazine. When I was at university, I was really passionate about graphic design. I think my cousin was a graphic designer, and I was completely amazed about his work. And I really wanted to be a graphic designer, but actually at that time, in 2007, there was not graphic design degree in Spain. Mm-hmm. I mean, there were some kind of courses or short courses, but not related to good quality institutions that have actually developed these kind of programs. So I decided to go into architecture because it had a really important part of the educational and part was developed in graphic design, art. So I went architecture in there. So in the beginning, I was not that into architecture. I didn't have, interest. That's actually curious. But then a couple of years later, I started to develop, of course, this interest about architecture. And I found that could be, and I found as a student, of course, that actually all the magazines, all the published documents were more focused on publishing, I don't know, work from teachers and from people that has been writing for a long time. So I said, why don't we find the way to do a small magazine, really humble, nothing special, but actually between us. And the only rule, it would be that this magazine won't have any kind of section. Everything will be free completely. Mm-hmm. And the name of the author will be published, but not the biographical, I don't know who he is or what is he doing. So in a sense, it was nice because actually we stayed there. We published this magazine for 5 years. We did 10 issues, and we could, publish like 60 articles or somehow, between teachers, students, people from different, but not architects, not only architects, like people from art, from cinema, from theater. Wow. Like people were like just putting all the content in the magazine, and the magazine was just focused on that. So it was like these 5 years. Somehow I did the layout design. I was involved in all the parts of design process, correction of the text, everything. I was completely involved in all the parts of the magazine. So afterwards, I was like doing auto or self-publishing. Somehow now it's really common, but actually in that time was like not that important. I mean, these kind of big publishing houses related to architecture was like they were booming. And actually we did that in the beginning. Then afterwards I was developing another projects, and actually a publishing house were interested by it. So we published with them, compilation of 20 articles of this magazine, and actually another projects afterwards. So I was first self publishing this kind of project, and then I was author as well, publishing photographic material from Japan and some other trips that I did. And afterwards I found that that through this process I learned a lot of things. This relates to the relationship between authors and publishing houses, how everything works. I could see what I liked and what I didn't like about it. And I tried to, and I said, all right, I think this happened just last year, 2020. It was March, then the lockdown. And in April, I said, we are going to do a publishing house. I mean, it was something that, now that I have time because everything has stopped, it will be nice to do a publishing house and try to develop everything that I saw during these 10 years that I didn't like about the publishing world somehow. I mean, percentages, contracts, what I see that it wasn't unfair. I really wanted to fix it and to do it my own way. So I started to figure out how to do it. I registered the name, I registered the company, I started to see how to do all the invoice, how to work with bookshops, how to do with all with everything. And we did two books. I mean, we published two books last year. It was like one just in March or June and one in December. And actually it was a complete success because this last book that we published in December, we were chosen finalist in one of the main awards in Spain related to architecture. And it was a complete success because actually with just two books, we could develop a product with a high quality. Also, a team of Indian architects developed a really interesting research about step wells. There is this kind of wells that they have in, well, specifically from Ahmedabad, but these kind of water structures that were used to store the subterranean water and the rainfall water as well, to provide water to the villages. And it was really, really interesting to work with them. We worked with them for 6 months or so. And it had really, really, really good experience because I have always defended that the publishing world somehow could be a business, but I don't understand it as a business. I think it's more
it's a vocation, maybe.
No, but I'm not saying about your attitude towards this.
Yeah.
It's just more that it's a door open to intellectual interests. So it's not that you are publishing or not publishing. It's like when you have this publishing project, then a lot of interesting content come to you. I'm not to correct, to see if you publish or not or whatever, but somehow you are growing every time, you know, because you'll read and you read the projects and you correct and then you go once and again after it. So it's I think it's a really one of the great learning experience that I had, like being involved in this kind of publishing projects and finally starting this publishing house.
What's the name of your publishing house so people can find you?
It's called Calmo. That is actually, yeah, like calm, like it's like calma in Spanish, but actually calmo, it means the same as calma or calm, but it's more abstract. It's more like we try to defend a little bit, or to, we chose the name because it was more related to this kind of pause and way of just taking your time to publish, you know? Not just publish really fast and a lot of books, and then I arrive this project, and then I just do the layout design, and then let's publish the next month. It's just trying to take our time, being involved, working in one or two projects every time, not involved in many more. And I don't know if we have to spend many time to develop the design or develop the concept. It's not a problem. It's just more like a calm process.
Okay.
And I think that nowadays also we need to stop a little bit. I mean, there's this kind of high speed society. So it's the name is a kind of intention.
There's a nice meaning behind that. And do you focus mostly on architectural books? Is that, or are you open to publishing anything that's intellectually interesting?
Right now, everything else, because our world is surrounded by architecture, of course, is related to architecture. I mean, the two books that we already published are from architecture. But I think that we are interested in many other things. I mean, we are now working with a photographer, with an artist as well, maybe in two projects that can go further. And I think we are more open to do, I think it's just not just produce the book, but to do some kind of a quality. We always say that we don't want just to publish the book, but also some kind of an object that is a little bit of a game, you know, that you can play with it. So we always spend a lot of time to develop, for example, the cover, how everything is folded. If we can, I don't know, introduce some kind of trick in how can you use the book. So yeah, I don't know. I mean, we are interested in many other things, not just architecture. Yes, absolutely.
And Miguel, the man, what are your influences? I mean, are there writers or singers or artists that, you know, have influenced your sensibilities?
Well, that's really difficult. I didn't expect that. But
sorry about that.
I don't know. For example, yeah, I will have to say that actually for publishing, one of my favorite publishers are Lars Müller Publishers from Switzerland, if I'm not wrong. I really like their work. I mean, Lars Müller has been working in publishing for decades. And this kind of this Swiss school of design, I'm really interested by it, like for, I don't know, since the beginning. And it's, I have more references to publishing, but probably Lars Müller is one of my, the top. I think they always publish everything related to art and to architecture in a really nice way. And they also are really challenging with the projects and with the design. I think that's one of my main references, at least in publishing. In architecture, it's really difficult. I don't know how to find an architect, because nowadays we have this kind of continuous, I would say one architect and suddenly then there is another one. So it would be really, really difficult to do it. Maybe if I think in 5 minutes, I would say, but right now it's difficult. And in carpentry, or I think that right now carpentry is really a reference for me. I follow many, I mean, on Instagram, I could follow many accounts of Japanese carpenters. and they are building shrines or they are building houses or whatever. But I see in this process is something like a really important reference to me. Just, I don't know. I think this affects somehow the way I see what I do. It's difficult to I don't know. There is one Japanese architect, maybe, Kazuo Shinohara, that he was actually, I don't know, he developed from really traditional houses to really, I don't know, strange or more experimental architecture in the city. He passed through many stages, but he was coherent, yeah, during the different times where he was developing the work. And actually, his plans are really good and really well drawn. So I think that's could be one reference that is interesting, and I maybe tell this reference to you maybe. But yeah, I think that could be one, for example.
Excellent. Well, Miguel, it's been a huge pleasure talking to you. You've been an interesting subject to talk to. You've had so many experiences. You've gone to another culture, you've picked up new skills, and you've founded your own publishing house with a sensibility towards doing it well, being intellectually curious, having this artistic element to it as well. So I doff my cap to you, Miguel. You're a fascinating person. Thank you so much for making the time.
Thank you so much. was my complete pleasure. Thank you. I feel really comfortable. At the beginning was a little bit nervous, but yeah, now it was like talking like, I don't know, a whole life friend. So it was like really comfortable. And thank you so much.
We'll have to have you back in the future, because I'm sure in 6 months you'd have done something else which is noteworthy as well. The largest wooden structure in Madrid. But for now, well, thank you so much for your time, Miguel. So take care and bye-bye.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.